Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. My name is DJ Short, and I'm back here once again with Eric Cymulski. So last week on our show, we talked about some fantasy surprises from this season, and also what to think of some of these players going into 2024 drafts. I'm actually doing a 2024 early mock draft with some folks from Tout Wars. It's a 15 team mock. I think we're doing 8 rounds. The clock just started at noon. Nobody has picked yet. It is a very slow draft, apparently.
Sure.
But I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of this. Just a really fun exercise. There's really like no 2024 rankings out there yet. I know Matthew does his around the All-Star break, so I have a little bit as sort of like guardrails, but I feel like a lot has changed since the All-Star break anyway. I'm really excited to dig into this and see where this goes.
Yeah, I tried to get into that. There was just such an influx of people who were like gung-ho for a 2024 draft, which, you know, doesn't surprise me too much about the fantasy baseball industry. I'm curious to see how that lines up. I mean, I think, you know, the talking point is always like closers and where do closers go. But you know, a lot of these young guys, I'm intriguing. I mean, you know, we saw a huge jump this year with guys like Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt Jr. And then next year, you know, 2024 drafts, you're going to see stuff similar with like the Gunnar Hendersons and the, you know, Corbin Carrolls and maybe the Ellie De La Cruzes. And so that kind of stuff is always fun to see. And then, you know, we're going to talk about some guys today who really disappointed us this year. And so it's always intriguing to see, you know, some of these guys that we have on our list were high round draft picks this year. And it'll be curious to see how people respond to them next year, whether we, you know, have some confidence that we can jump back in or, you know, whether we're fully out.
I think people just love the process of drafting. And, you know, if you've been doing fantasy football drafts, best ball drafts, whatever it is, you just want to do more and more drafts. So
sure.
NFL season starting this week. That means drafts are actually still happening. I'm in the middle of one right now, a slow draft. We're hoping to get it done by kickoff tomorrow. We'll see what happens. But I
have my final auction tonight. So yeah, keep them
nice.
Going.
So people still drafting. So get the RotoWorld draft guide. If you have your draft tonight, do it. Includes all the rankings, player profiles, projections you need to win your league this year. Go to nbcsports.com/draft guide to get your draft guide now. And also a little fun bonus for our listeners, champ23, our promo code, save 20% off and receive a $10 Fanatics e-gift card. So if you're drafting tonight, make sure you go to nbcsports.com/draft guide. So I'm going to kick off our fantasy disappointments. And these are players that came to the year with big expectations. And this first name I'm going to mention is, you know, past couple of years, especially after a big 2020 season, has been drafted in the late first round, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I wouldn't say he's been a disaster. Like, that's not the case. Certainly not. 21 homers, 82 RBI, 64 runs scored. Pretty close to what you would think, hitting 268. But looking at what the expectations were coming out of that 2021 season where he had the 1,000-plus OPS, last year, 818 OPS, this year, 784 OPS. And then if you look at the first base position, this was kind of shocking to me. Among first base eligible players on Yahoo, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is 12th in home runs, 9th in RBIs, tied for 16th in runs scored. Now, expected stats still love him. He hits the ball hard, doesn't strike out very much. You can always talk yourself into that ceiling. But I'm not sure. Now, 2 years in a row where it's kind of been not really standing out among the pack, even at first base. So he is a disappointment, but it's hard to quit on him. But to me, he's a disappointment.
Yeah, I think, you know, the questions with him were always, and the speed has been better than we expected, right? Everybody always, he was a four category guy, right? Now, five stolen bases this year is not anything that you're going to like write home about, but it's something in a category. But the issue with him was always, you know, he didn't lift. He hit the ball really hard, hit the ball on a line, which is great, but makes it harder to hit home runs consistently, right? Because we understand that, you know, when you ball leaves the bat at a particular launch angle, it makes it more likely that the ball can carry out of the park and yada, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And he spiked 48 home runs in 2021 when his average launch angle was 9.4 degrees. That's hard to do. That is an outlier type of performance. Last year, the launch angle went down to 4.3. It's up to 10 this year. But the infield fly ball rates have gone up over 11% the last 2 years. So, and they were down, you know, under 7 before. I just think this is a guy who hits the ball hard, who may never hit for the type of power we want because he doesn't have natural lift in his swing. And as he tries to maybe get more lift in his swing, sometimes he's, you know, it hurts his results. Like he pops the ball up a lot. You know, and he doesn't give himself a lot of wiggle room because he doesn't really provide much in the way of speed. So I think you're happy to have him on your team, but I don't think he belongs in, you know, the Pete Alonso, Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson grouping that people want him to be up in.
Right. I totally agree. I think we will start to see the market correct going to next year, most likely. I think when you look at, you know, the Baseball Savant page, there is quite a bit of red there. The expected batting average this season is 299. So you still see the path for, I mean, 268. I feel like he can be better than that. I don't think there's any question about that. So the batting average improves, some of the counting stats will improve, and it'll look a little nicer. But yeah, I agree. As long as that launch angle is where it is, the upside in the power category just isn't going to be there compared to what we saw, you know, in 2021.
So let me throw something out at you for a second.
Okay. All
right. Because I was just looking up the weighted runs created plus leaderboard on FanGraphs. Okay. And Guerrero's 13th. Okay. Some notable players above him. You have your Freemans. You have your Alonzos. FanGraphs lists Bellinger as a first baseman. Olson's ahead of him. Guys like that. Goldschmidt's ahead of him. Nathaniel Lowe is ahead in weighted runs created plus, Christian Walker, Yandy Diaz. But there's another hitter who is also for the season hitting the exact same 268 as Vladimir Guerrero. This hitter has 23 home runs to Guerrero's 21 home runs, 63 runs and 60 RBIs to Guerrero's 64 runs and 82 RBIs. But this hitter is Tristan Casas.
I knew it.
Who was atrocious at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And has really come on in the second half of the year. And now, before I looked at that leaderboard, I would never have even thought about taking Casas over Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Right.
But in 46 games in the second half of the season, Casas is hitting 340 with 14 home runs, 33 RBIs in 46 games.
Yeah.
I think that there's a reasonable expectation, or there's a reasonable outcome where, like, those guys are going back to back next year. They're a lot closer than people may think.
Yeah, I mean, just when you look at the baseball card stats here with Vlad Jr., 268, 21 home runs, 82 RBI is pretty nice. I'm not going to
great. I mean, that's
that.
A great lineup. So, yeah.
Yeah, 64 runs scored. But, like, that seems like numbers you could get pretty late. Or maybe even in some cases, like you were mentioning, with Casas, like, off the waiver wire. Kind of crazy right. to think about it that way, but it's true.
Yeah, and I think, to your point, like, the Blue Jays are likely to have a really strong lineup again next year. The context is great for Vlad to put up, you know, 100-plus RBIs. There's nothing wrong with drafting him. The takeaway, I think, is, like, he kind of winds up in the tier that Christian Walker was in this year, I think. And that's yeah. fine. But that was the, I'm not going to spend a high draft pick on a first baseman. I'm going to wait and get somebody like Christian Walker. And now some yes. of those guys didn't hit, right? The Jose Abreus, the Rowdy Tellezes, you know, they didn't hit this year, right? So, like, that's a risky proposition. But and Vlad yeah. maybe has a safer floor than some of the guys in that tier.
Yes.
But I think that you could easily see a tier, a 2024 tier that includes guys like Nathaniel Lowe, Christian Walker, Vlad Guerrero, Tristan Casas, and it kind of depends on if you're going for average or power or speed or whatever.
Yeah. Vlad's probably always going to go higher, but yes. I think this is just another reminder this year that you don't have to reach for that.
My disappointment is on the pitching side, and it's Dylan Cease. And I think everybody knew the 220 ERA last year was not sustainable. Yes. But I was a believer that we had seen him take a clear step forward. I thought, you know, high two, low three ERA pitcher, the strikeouts were always going to be elite. I thought the team context would be better than it wound up being. And obviously, you know, averaging over four walks a game isn't great, but his walk rate is 10.6 this year. It was 10.4 last year. So I know people want to blame the walk rate for why Dylan Cease hasn't been good this year, but I really don't think that that's it. He's become a more hittable pitcher. His swinging strike rate last year was 15.7%. It's down to 14.3% this year. The velocity on his fastball was down over a mile per hour from last right. year. His velocity is down across the board over a mile per hour from last year. Not only is the slider velocity down, but the slider has less movement than it did last year. And was that a conscious decision? Is that arm trouble? Who knows? But the slider was his best pitch last year. It's getting hit harder this year. It's, you know, defense independent ERA is way up. The fastball swinging strike rates are way down, or, you know, down over 2% from last year. It strikes me as, like, something isn't right.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you see a velocity dip like that and you see a movement decrease, and the pitcher is getting hit harder, so the results don't back it up, you would think that there would be some shift. And so I'm not going to predict injury. I don't think that that's the case or what's going on. But I don't think that we should just use the catch-all of, like, oh, his location is bad. I think there are some things going on with Cease where, like, the movement profile on his pitches is just not what it was last year. And maybe he needs to just tinker in the offseason. Maybe there's some fatigue. Who knows?
Yeah, 22 walks in 28 innings in August. His first start in September, which was Tuesday, gave up three home runs in five and a third innings. He actually has the same whiff rate on his slider this year that he had last year, but the batting average against is about 100 points higher. The slugging percentage is about 150 points higher. So you're right. Something isn't quite right with Cease. He was someone I avoided in drafts this year because the control did scare me a little bit, but I wasn't, like, docking him that heavily Alek Manoah was someone I was like, I'm not touching, which actually turned out to be a good call. I had many bad calls. I was avoiding Spencer Strider in the first round, or I don't even know if I was drafting him in the second round in drafts this year. So I regret that. So I don't always hit on everything, but Cease this year has been the polar opposite of what we saw last year. And you know, going into next season, I mean, you look at the spread of ERA. Last year, 2.20 ERA, 4.98 this season. For me, it's like, sure, I'll take a flyer next year and see what happens. But
yes,
if it's a health thing, then it's kind of more up in the air, right?
But I think that to me, those issues are I'm more liable to take a chance there because I think we can spot that early, right?
Yeah.
If his velocity is down again in the spring, you're like, okay, there's still something going on. If he looks healthy, you know, if we can see the velo, if we can see the movement ticking back in the way that we want, we can feel a little bit better about it. I think now I didn't have many shares this year because he was going really high and I was only really taking in my drafts like one starting pitcher early and then trying to wait to get into like the Musgrove tier of starting pitchers, which, you know, didn't work out all that well either. But I think Cease is if he's a 3.5, 3.6, 3.7 ERA pitcher next year with plus strikeouts, there's value in that still. And if people are going to be scared off because of this, and I can get him where people were getting him last year after putting up a 3.9 ERA with, you know, over 12 strikeouts per nine, like maybe that's just the pitcher he is. Maybe we were optimistic about him taking the step forward, but maybe he's a 3.8 ERA pitcher with high strikeouts and a average whip, and there's still value there. And you know, if you can get a solid ratio pitcher early on, then you know you can load up on the strikeout guy. So I'm not fully out, but I need to see the velocity in the spring next year.
Good call.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
So I have another Blue Jay for my second disappointment, and that's Dalton Varsho. Of course, was traded from the Diamondbacks to the Blue Jays. And I didn't think we expected a ton to change, you know, as far as offensive environment better, lineup arguably better. But this year, 220, 16 homers, 15 stolen bases, 55 runs scored over 137 games as a catcher-eligible player. So it's still certainly usable, but even among catchers, he's ranked 13th in Yahoo leagues in overall value. Again, 15 stolen bases from a catcher, that's nice, but in an environment where speed is on the rise, he just doesn't stand out as much. So what made him so valuable to in that extra spot in your roster to eke out, you know, 20 steals? Not quite as valuable right now. The key with Varsho, though, all of his starts this season has come in the outfield. So he loses that catcher eligibility going into next season. already kind of a flawed profile as an offensive player. He's going to continue to be in the lineup every day because he's very good defensively, but loses that catcher eligibility going into next season. That is the thing you need to know about Varsha going into next year. And when you take that away, he's more of like a late round player at this point. And I think even, you know, in standard leagues that are like 10 team, 12 team, he might even be like waiver wire fodder than someone you're going to draft universally.
Is he not just healthy Harrison Bader?
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah. That's a very good call.
A 230 hitter, 20 home runs, 15 stolen bases. Like, to me, that's what you get from Harrison Bader if he ever were to play a full season, which, yes. You know, again, is a feather in the cap of Dalton Varsho. As you know, he's going to be in the lineup because of the defense and all of that. But, like, you know, we talked the other day about, oh, where are you taking Lane Thomas? Like, you know, people are going to overdraft Lane Thomas. Well, Lane Thomas is hitting 280 and he's got 23 home runs and 17 stolen bases. So I'm taking Lane Thomas over Dalton Varsho literally every day. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what you need to recalibrate yourself when you think about Varsho in like as an outfield only player. You know, looking at the leaderboards around him, like James Outman has 17 homers and 14 stolen bases, but he's hitting 255. Mm-hmm. Ian Happ in a down year, 17 homers, 13 stolen bases, hitting 245. Like Leody Taveras is hitting 264, 13 home runs, 12 home runs, 13 stolen bases. Like Varsho and Leody Taveras are kind of in the same realm. And Leody Taveras was not drafted in a lot of leagues. And I think if you did a 2024 draft right now, there'd be a lot of 12 team leagues that don't draft Leody Taveras. Obviously, right. Lineup context. If, you know, Varsho is going to hit at the top of the order for the Blue Jays, there's value there. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't been a consistent lineup spot for him. You know, right. He's now hitting like mostly like seventh. So I don't know. I might be fully out next year.
Yeah, me too.
Right. I'm going to keep with pitching. It's Sandy Alcantara. Another pitcher who we expected regression from because the stats last year were insane at the 2.28 ERA. It's kind of like the same as Cease. I faded last year, and obviously it didn't work for me. But my thought process was he doesn't get a lot of swings and misses, low strikeout guy with a bunch of innings on that arm. Yeah. And I faded this year for the same reasons, plus no shift. Really bad infield defense. And I think some of those things have really come back to bite him. I know a lot of people also mention he gets stretched out really far by Miami. And sometimes like that final inning, you know, it's a little bit of like, I think Nick Pollock on Pitcher List calls it the careful Icarus, where, you know, you fly too close to the sun, you get that last inning that winds up kind of blowing up. And, you know, we've seen that a lot with Alcantara. But he's got a 4.14 ERA. It's a 4.02 xFIP. His strikeout rate has gone down. The walk rate has gone up. You know, the swinging strike rate is pretty similar, and the velocity is pretty similar. So nothing screams like injury. I think if you watch him pitch, his location is a little bit less precise. The defense behind him is a little bit worse. And he's a guy who gives up a lot of contact, generally speaking. So those things are a problem. And I really do think that I personally am not going to go into 2024 thinking of Sandy Alcantara as a fantasy ace. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my approach. If he's my SP2, fine. But I think this is a mid-3 ERA arm in the new baseball environment. And an arm who is going to have another 200 inning season, three in a row, 200 inning season likely coming up. Like, you don't want to project injuries because we can't, but that is a sticky situation.
For sure. I mean, we know the Marlins push him, and my thought on Alcantara coming into the year is that while the strikeouts weren't there like per inning, what you got in, you know, just the allotment of innings he would get, because he'd probably throw more than anyone, you still get the strikeouts. So you still get the number, which will be similar at the end of the year. That's kind of how I rationalize it to myself. Mm-hmm. I I probably didn't. I knew the Marlins defense was going to be bad, but even looking at the sort of those advanced numbers, it's not all that. So it's like, it's a very weird season for Alcantara. I think at least what you can hang your hat on recently, he's been better. Has a 304 ERA over his last 11 starts, 62 strikeouts, 15 walks, and 77 innings. So the strikeouts are still not really there, but he's had, you know, a few kind of more patented Alcantara starts where he pitches eight. He had a complete game against the Yankees, which, you know, you can understand why that happened, with 10 strikeouts at last month. So he's been a little better recently. So I think finishing strong will help him. But I agree, you know, not the strikeout percentage, not being able to hang with those other aces will probably take him outside the top 10 fantasy starters going into next year.
I think, like, if you were to say, would you rather have Zach Gallen or Sandy Alcantara? Right. I mean, Zach Gallen right now has a 3.48 ERA. He's got 86 strikeouts and 178 innings. Blah, you know, those are just stats. We just know the pitcher that Zach Gallen is, and we know the pitcher that Sandy Alcantara is. And I don't know that there's a wide gap there from a fantasy perspective. And you know, if you were to tell people Zach Gallen is a fantasy ace, I think you'd get a lot of, is he? I mean, some people would say yes. Some people would say, I'd rather have him as my SP2. And I kind of think that's where Alcantara ends up. You're like fringe on the outside of the top 10, where, you know, some people will be ecstatic to get him as their ace, and others would feel like they missed on some of their top guys.
Sure. The last two starts for Gallen have totally torpedoed his NL Cy Young Award chances, where now he's not even being discussed in the top three. It's
I know. Now it's Justin Steele instead.
Now it's Justin Steele, you know, Blake Snell, Spencer Strider. I don't know which way this is going to go. I still think that Gallen has a, you know, four good starts to finish out the year. He still has a chance, but he's probably not. At this point, which makes me sad. I have a futures bet on him.
So. If you trust what you read on Twitter, which you know shouldn't, but it seems like nobody wants to give the award to Strider. Like, everybody's finding reasons for why he shouldn't qualify. He doesn't throw enough innings. You know, he's got a 3.56 ERA. That's not Cy Young ERA. It's all strikeouts, and maybe it is all strikeouts. But he's also
pretty good. Is he going to strike out 300 batters? He might, right?
He might. He's at 245 right now. He's got four more. He's got four more starts. So, I mean, he could push 280.
Yeah. Hey, it's not bad.
Yeah.
a pitcher I'm disappointed in, Aaron Nola, who is just an enigma wrapped in a riddle. Wrapped in something else, a nesting doll of confusion, I guess, is the way to put it. Just a topsy-turvy pitcher. So 4.63 ERA in 2021. Last year bounced back with a 3.25 ERA. Finished fourth in the NL Cy Young Award balloting. Career low walk rate as well. So things looking good for Nola coming into this year. Was drafted as a top 10 fantasy starter. This year, though, 4.55 ERA. Across 28 starts. And yes, this is another case of a defense not being great behind him. So we're looking at a 3.81x ERA, almost a full run lower, but it's more than that. And it's a Nola issue. Strikeout percentage is down, lowest since 2016. Walks are up, his highest since the COVID season in 2020. Home run rate, the highest of his career as well. If you remember Nola coming into the majors, he was a ground ball pitcher. Yeah. But it has shifted in the other direction now, where his ground ball rate is actually below the league average. So you have someone giving up more fly balls, more home runs, missing fewer bats, walking more batters. So it's not hard to see why this has all come together as it has. What makes it even more fascinating for Nola is that he's going to be a free agent this winter in a class that contains Shohei Ohtani. Will he pitch next year? Who knows? Blake Snell's stock is up going into free agency. Nola's is down. I still think he's going to get paid pretty well because of the track record. But to me, he's confusing, polarizing, fascinating. Very interested to see where he goes next, because with a better defense, you could see it coming together for him.
Yeah, I think I would love to see him go to a smart organization that can figure out what to do with a going to be 31-year-old pitcher whose fastball velocity is not good. Mm-hmm. Because that's also been a big issue for him right now. And that also screams Cleveland Guardians, because they make the most out of pitchers with no fastballs. But like his four-seam fastball has a 13.4% barrel rate allowed this year. Its swinging strike rate is down 2%. Defense independent ERA, which is a metric I really like that Alex Chamberlain has on his pitch leaderboard, which factors in like outside of defensive performance, what is the ERA on the balls in play? What should the ERA have been? It's 4.66 on his four-seam fastball this year. It was 3.06 last year. It's been a big downgrade. And then the swinging strike rate is down on the curveball because the curveball is a little faster and has less movement this year. So that's interesting. I don't know. Like, I think he's a smart and talented pitcher, and I would love to see him go to an organization that can, you know, shift him. I hate saying this as a 38-year-old man, that somebody who's 31 needs to, you know, think about the second half of his career, but like he needs to shift into like, okay, how can you succeed now that you have some diminished stuff? Right. The fastball is not as good as it used to be, and it was never his calling card. So sure, he has to pitch smarter. He has to sequence better. And that hasn't been happening this year. And, you know, he's probably too expensive for the Rays, but like the Rays are a team that could do that. Maybe the Giants, totally. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, the Guardians won't sign him either. He's too expensive. Right. But I hear what you're saying there. Giants would be interesting.
I'd be curious to see. I'm going to throw this out there as like a Red Sox fan, but like, listen, the Red Sox got decent performance out of Michael Wacha last year. Nick Pivetta, it's like sometimes they look like they fixed him, sometimes they look like they didn't. I wonder if that's now he's a little bit of like a lower cost signing to put in that rotation that desperately needs bodies. The home run issue in Fenway would not be great though. So
yeah, I still think he's going to get $100 million being 30 years old. He turned 30 in June. He's still going to get $100 million, you know, since he's 30, he's probably going to get like 5 years, I would think. So you're probably looking at 5 years, 120, something like that. He'll get it.
Hello, Mets.
I could see that too. I honestly could, because the Mets need someone.
You mean Quintana, their ace, Kode Senga?
Yeah, Kode Senga has been great. He's been great, but you can't have Jose Quintana as your number two. Like, you need to get somebody else in there. Because after that, it's just a huge mess. So I could see the Mets are going to sign a pitcher. Nolan makes
or two
sense.
Or three.
Or two, I mean, they tried that last offseason. Didn't work out so well.
Yeah. My next disappointment might be a little bit of a personal disappointment to me, just because he was on so many of my rosters, and it's Tyler O'Neill. And I was just really – I was banking on a little bit of a bounce back toward what we saw in 2021. I felt like the power speed was there. I really thought the underlying metrics last year suggested that the batting average could at least go up to 260, not necessarily like the 280 that he hit in 2021. And obviously it was a total mess of a year for O'Neill, for the Cardinals in general. There was the idea, there's the Ollie Marmol stuff of like publicly outing O'Neill, and then O'Neill spent so much time on the IL, and then was he actually hurt? Was there, you know, just some issue with management? And so the numbers have not been there just from like a surface level helping of your fantasy team. 9 home runs in 64 games is, you know, serviceable, 5 steals, 64 games. If you extrapolate that out, the strikeout rate was still down around 26. The walk rate went up over 10%. The barrel rate is still at 13.4%. So like the problem is that there's enough in there that makes me think I'm just going to do this again next season.
Oh, sure.
And hopefully it's not in St. Louis. Or hopefully Ali Marmol isn't in St. Louis or whatever. I really do think, like, I don't want to make too much of a player, manager, whatever, but I think if they run it back and O'Neill is there and Marmol's there and they still have, you know, all this glut of outfielders that they try and rotate all the time, then I might just back off and say this is a situation that is, you know, not conducive to fantasy success. But the player, the profile of the player, I still think is somebody who, you know, hits 260 with 25 to 30 home runs and 10 plus stolen bases. And I still think that's valuable in leagues. It just did not happen this year. And I got burned a lot of places. Thankfully, you know, in NFBC formats, I was able to just move on when he got hurt. But again, you're not capitalizing on the draft position you used.
I think what's interesting about O'Neill is, like, in the year where he exploded and he had the 34 homers and 15 steals and, like, gave you all the category juice you could want, he struck out 31.3% of the time.
Yeah.
So since then, he's become more selective but less productive. It's weird how that works, right? You'd think it might be the opposite.
Yeah, I think sometimes there are some hitters that – need to be aggressive. There's some hitters that their value is, I'm going to get my pitch and I'm going to crush it. And if I think I'm getting that pitch and I don't, I'm going to swing and miss more, but I'm going to do damage. Right. And we've seen a lot of guys who get more passive and struggle.
Juan Moncada is that player to me.
Yeah. And if you look at, you know, if you look at his profile, you know, his swing rate was, his just regular swing rate was 49.8% in 2021. So almost 50%. It's 44.7 this year. Yeah. His, you know, zone swing is down about 5%. You know, the swinging strike rate is way down. So he's not swinging and missing as much, but I don't want to see your zone swing rate go down that much. Right. That means that, you know, pitchers are being able to get ahead of you theoretically. Right. I don't know what his zone swing rate is on each, you know, count.
Sure.
But theoretically, it means pitchers are getting ahead, which gets you in pitchers' counts, which means you're not getting the pitches that you can hit. So I'd love to see that balance a little bit more in order for me to think he hits the ceiling that he showed in 2021. But I think even if we taper back the expectations, I think there's fantasy value there.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I you know, the ADP next year is going to be very reasonable, which is, you know, maybe a good thing. If I had to handicap it right now, I don't think Ali Marmol will be back as the Cardinals manager next season after, for them, the Cardinals, this is like a disaster. I mean, it's a bad season anyway, you know, no matter where you are without all that added context. But just the consistent excellence that the Cardinals have had, some of this is like a front office thing. They needed pitching. They didn't get it. So maybe shouldn't be so shocking where they are right now. But for Marmol to be at the helm while this season happened like this, I would be surprised if he's back next season. Maybe that helps a little bit, his outlook going into next year. So I'll get to my next one here in a second. But first, it's a double dip of Sunday Night Football this week. The season kicks off on Thursday, September 7th. That's tomorrow, when Patrick Mahomes and the Super Bowl champion Chiefs host the Lions, followed by Dak Prescott and the Cowboys taking on Saquon Barkley and the Giants on Sunday. Coverage of both games started 7 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. When I hear that NFL on NBC music, I'm like ready to run through a wall. So I cannot wait to hear it tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun to kick off the NFL season.
And a great game too.
Oh yeah. If you couldn't ask for anything better, we'll see if Travis Kelce plays in that game. It's looking doubtful.
I would say no. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see if it's more of like a week to week type of injury, a multi-week injury, something to track. Go to rotoworld.com. Follow our player news feed, constantly updated, whatever's going on with that. And we also have our headlines back on our Twitter accounts for our various sports. So, you know, throughout the day, keep it locked there and you'll get all the relevant information you need.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
My next disappointment here, Andrés Giménez. Now, I feel like you could see this coming a bit coming into the year. I don't think I drafted him anywhere. Not to say he's not a useful player and that I didn't see parts of his game that I liked, but last year hit 297. The expected batting average was 231, which is shocking. that it was that. So you could kind of see why maybe this might not work out. Now, counting stats-wise this year, been useful. 12 home runs, 50 RBIs, 24 steals, 62 runs scored. Gets the volume in the Guardians lineup as well. Batting average, though, 234. And the expected batting average is 231. So, like, he's pretty much getting what he deserves here. 680 OPS, 837 OPS last year. The counting stats are still useful, like I said, but again, the speed doesn't stand out, which I thought would, you know, keep him afloat. And it does to an extent, but certainly not the upside you would have wanted. Highest batting average for a full month this season is 250, which was in April. Now, Giménez makes a lot of contact, but the issue with him is that he makes some of the softest contact in the game. Barrel percentage this season, 18th percentile. Average exit velocity in the 1% range, hard hit percentage in the third percentile. So not a lot of power. If he's not hitting the ball hard, I don't see the batting average really being there. So he's kind of, you know, he's useful, but not exciting. Is he going to be drafted in standard mixed leagues next year? Maybe, but I just don't really see him being that interesting, at least until we see the quality of contact.
Yeah, I think I could be in next year as a middle infield option if I see one thing, and that's I need him to not hit the ball in the air.
Yeah.
You just brought up all the reasons why he shouldn't hit the ball in the air that much because he should not be hitting for power because he doesn't hit the ball with enough authority. Right. But he raised his launch angle 2% up to 13.4% this year. His fly ball rate is the highest of his career, which jumped in infield fly ball rate too. And his home run per fly ball rate just went down. And I don't – his lowest launch angle month was April, which you just mentioned was his best month of the year. Yeah. This is a guy who should be hitting ground balls and line drives and using his speed. And I think there's a path for him to be a 260 to 270 hitter with the like 25 plus stolen bases and 10 to 15 home runs or whatever. Right. And I think that has value as a middle infield option. And again, this is a young hitter who's 25 years old, who might still just be figuring out, you know, adjusting to what is his best kind of path for success at the Major League Baseball level. And so I have some hope for him next year, but again, I'm dialing it back to like if he's my middle infielder, not if he's my starting second baseman, not if he's my starting shortstop. And I would like to see, you know, those changes in the spring where he's not so, you know, lift focused for him.
Right. I mean, I think sometimes it can be a little cookie cutter in terms of what we think the ideal for a player's approach to be. And yeah, the launch angle idea doesn't work for everyone. And I feel like each hitter should have a different game plan. And yeah, maybe I think he's in a good situation there in Cleveland to get on the right path. They seem to be smart and they employ a number of hitters who aren't those type of power players. So we'll see where it goes moving forward. I think he is young enough where he can make those adjustments. And the defense is outstanding too. So it's not like he's at risk of, and he also has a contract extension with the Guardians. Right. He's going to be there every day. We know that, but yeah, certainly the ADP isn't going to be anywhere close to where it is this year.
My next one is a guy who I think we do. It's kind of the exact opposite profile. Cause it's Matt Chapman who hits the ball incredibly hard and is still hitting the ball incredibly hard. But nothing else is really happening for him this year. He's hitting .248 on the year with 15 home runs in 125 games. From a lot of that damage was in April. So from May 1st on, Chapman's hitting .211, 10 home runs, just 29 RBIs in 98 games with a 30% strikeout rate. But if you like your new sliders on StatCast, which I actually do like the new redesign, but 97th percentile average exit velocity, 97th percentile barrel rate, 99th percentile hard hit rate, 94th percentile chase rate. So he's not chasing the ball out of the zone, but he still swings and misses a lot, which is almost worse because he has a good idea at the plate and is missing. And the batting average is super low. And I kind of don't know what to make of this because we've now seen this become part of a trend with him where he hits the ball really hard and also has a good understanding of the strike zone, but still swings and misses a lot. And it's a little bit confounding. And you keep going like, yeah, I want to roster the guy who has a 17% barrel rate in September because that's ridiculous. Yep. But I just, I will take some shares somewhere as a bench bat, as a corner infield bat next year, because we know with his defense, he's going to stay on the field. And it's hard to bet against somebody who hits the ball that hard consistently and has shown the ability to hit for power. And I do think some of it is unlucky, right? Like, I don't know. The expected home runs metric on StatCast is a little bit of like, how accurate is it really? But of the 15, he has 15 home runs this year. If he played in Baltimore, the expected home runs are 21. It's 21 if he played in, at the Angel Stadium. It's 26 if he was in Mariners. It's 24 in Atlanta, 24 in Philly, 29 in Cincy, 24 in Milwaukee, 22 in LA. So like, again, not a like surefire metric to suggest he should be a mid-20s home run hitter, but I think it's not a shock to say when somebody's barreling the ball 17% of the time and has 15 home runs that there's a little bit of luck factored into that.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I mean, the barrel rate, 17.2%. The expected slugging is .462. His actual slugging percentage is .431. The plate discipline is good. It's good. I mean, the strikeout rate isn't terrible. I think he's just because of the sheer number of fly balls that he hits, like he's never going to hit for average.
Right.
But I do think there's some power upside here. His season is incredibly front loaded. April, he hit .372 with 5 home runs and 20 RBIs. He's driven in 30 runs since April.
Yeah. It's crazy. Especially because we just made the same argument about Vlad Jr. where like the RBIs were high because of the lineup he's in, and Chapman's in that same lineup and he's like, nope, I'm not gonna drive anybody in.
Yes, exactly. So the draft has started, by the way, the 2024 mock, the first two picks. So Acuna, no surprise, went number one. Julio Rodriguez went number two.
That would have been my guess, yeah.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. I don't know who would be your three going into next year. It's not an easy call.
No, it's really not. I mean, if you look at, like, you know, this year you had what Jose Ramirez and Trey Turner were the guys that were in the top of that conversation. I mean, if you're getting August Trey Turner, then, you know, maybe he's back up in that conversation for like 3, 4, 5, whatever range.
Right.
Yeah. It'll be an interesting call. I think, you know, Judge has to be in the mix there as an early favorite.
Yeah. Mookie Betts, you know, over the past six weeks.
Mookie, yeah.
Played his way in there, even if the speed isn't really there for him. Mm-hmm. Fernando Tatis Jr., I think, is probably someone you should think about too. It's going to be interesting.
I think also, like, listen, if Shohei is just hitting next year, I mean, you're still looking at a guy who is hitting over 300 with 44 home runs and 20 steals. Like,
right. Yeah. I don't want to discount that, because just as a hitter in Yahoo, he's the number three ranked hitter. I think there's naturally going to be some, because of the, you know, the uncertainty of, does he have Tommy John? Is he rehabbing?
I think he's probably this year's Bryce Harper, right? Gets the off-season shoulder surgery, comes back maybe a month or two into the year, DHs, you know, so you're probably not in a perfect, well, you're probably not making that pick. Right. Yeah. I mean, Kyle Tucker looking like a good first round pick now. You know, can't knock Corbin Carroll's 41 stolen bases, 24 home runs. Like, they're all in that mix.
Yeah. Corbin Carroll just went number three.
Ah, so, there you go.
So yeah, I'm going to make a pick live. Let's do it.
Where are you picking four?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
So, I kind of want to go Tatis here.
Here's my question to you. Right. Coming into this year, everybody's thought was you need to make sure you get stolen bases early, which is why like Jose Ramirez, Trey Turner, and all of them were going.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you actually need stolen bases given the new climate with your first round pick?
No, I don't. I don't. I think you could definitely find it later. I think it's cheapened it a little bit with that, just how easy it is to steal. And I think you will find them more easily on the waiver wire. You could also piece it together more easily, getting players who you know will steal 10 bases, 15 bases, where you don't need to go out of your way to get a Trey Turner. But I'm going to, you know what? I am going to, I'm going to go with Bobby Witt Jr.
Wow. All right.
There we go.
You got
a moment of inspiration.
The young upside, the Corbin Carroll pick made you go.
It did.
Let's do it.
It did. I was thinking Mookie Betts, like, going into the day today, but 10 stolen bases this year. Like, I want to get, I still think in the first round, you want to get the well-rounded player to give you the floor to start your roster with. So I still think Witt, especially with what we've seen over the past couple of months, yes, I think stolen bases carry the profile, but I think the power is going to be there. I think it could be a 30 homer type of guy at some point here.
Out of curiosity, I did a rankings sort from, or not a rankings, a stat sort from June 1st on, because I knew he'd been playing, you know, obviously a lot better in the summer. Since June 1st, Bobby Witt's hitting .307 with 18 home runs and 22 RBIs in 81 games.
Yeah.
I think you're and 58 RBIs too, as with the Royals team that's been surprisingly, you know.
Yeah. That does drag it down a little bit, to be fair. But
but
I feel good about it.
I think you should.
All right. Okay. My final disappointment is Christian Javier with the Astros. And after what he did last year, both between the regular season and the postseason, remember he had a good run there to finish up the World Series with the Astros, had the 2.54 ERA during the regular season. Coming into the spring, he even had some hype as like a dark horse AL Cy Young Award candidate. But this year has looked really nothing like that pitcher, especially recently. 4.65 ERA over 26 starts. Actually had an ERA in the twos through mid-June, but he's just been terrible. since then. 7.15 ERA over his last 12 starts. Walks and home runs really hurting him during the stretch. 32 walks in 56 and two-thirds innings. 13 home runs allowed as well in those 12 starts. Now, Javier has always been an extreme fly ball pitcher. One of the lowest ground ball rates in all of baseball. So hardly surprising that home runs are an issue here. I wonder if, you know, looking at what he's done this year, I think the velocity's down a little bit, down a tick. But yeah, I'd be curious if you've noticed anything about Javier to suggest kind of what's going on here.
What I've noticed also might be couched in the fact that he might not work as good as a traditional starter. Remember he was stretched out last year. The swing and strike rate is way down. The velocity is down on his fastball by over a mile per hour, which again could be just like first year full starter's workload, that fatigue. The swing and strike rate is down on that pitch. The barrel rate is up to 11.6% on his fastball this year. Swing strike rate is down 7% on that slider. It was at 17.4% last year. It's at 10.4% this year. That's a massive, massive drop off for a pitch that also has less movement this year. It has a little bit less horizontal movement. Who knows if that's intentional or not, but like the fastball is getting hit hard. The slider hasn't been as good. I have real fears that, if, and these are huge ifs because we're talking about Lance McCullers here, but if Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia come back from injury and seem ready to go in the spring next year, I don't know if Christian Javier makes the rotation because he might just be better served being a bulk reliever. Yeah. I don't think it's crazy to suggest that JP France is better suited to be your starting pitcher five. And Christian Javier is better suited to be your kind of multi-inning fireman out of the bullpen.
Sure, and especially with the way he's pitched down the stretch, like probably won't be promised anything going into next year.
I think you're locked in on Framber, Verlander, Hunter Brown, and then you've got Luis Garcia, McCullers, JP France, and Javier for two rotation spots. So if we're talking about where are we drafting them for 2024, I may be fading Christian Javier pretty hard, assuming that he might be a bullpen piece.
Yeah, totally agree.
My last guy we could be quick about because we talked about him back in August, and it's Willy Adames. And Willy Adames may be the only guy that we talked about on that August show who didn't immediately start hitting after we won. He's been terrible.
Circling the bases bump.
Yeah. But Willy Adames was kind of like the guy in the, you don't need to get a shortstop early. You can wait and you can get the like Willy Adames tier of shortstops. And while the home run total has been there, 22 home runs in 126 games, he'll probably hit 25, 26 at the end of the year. So you're not really mad about that. But sitting 209, he seems to be the only player who decided he didn't want to match last year's stolen base total or improve on it. He stole eight bases last year, and I think everybody assumed with the new rules he would be in double digits. He has four. He's walking more than last year. The barrel rate is pretty consistent with last year. The swing rate is actually up, so we're not in a situation with like the Matt Chapmans of the world, the Tyler O'Neills of the world. He's chasing way more out of the zone. The O swing is up 5%. The batting average concerns for me are warranted by the approach, which seems to be way more aggressive out of the zone, not getting good pitches to hit, and without the speed component bumping up too. Like, we may be looking at Willy Adames going forward as like a 220 hitter who could maybe push 30 home runs and steal five bases.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, that's a player you're drafting at a middle infield spot, right? Because there's value if you need home runs and getting 25, 26 home runs from your middle infield spot. But usually you're looking at like a corner infielder for something like that. You don't really usually Correct. Want a middle infielder who hits 230 and steals five bases. Like that's Yes. usually not a roster construction.
Those are the spots where you get the speed typically. You're not getting Yeah. the speed from the corner spots. There are certain spots you need that for, especially right now where the speed is so much more plentiful. So if you're using one of those spots and a player doesn't run, that's going to hurt you from the start.
Yeah,
for sure. I think what's interesting about Adames is looking at the expected batting average, 2021, 236, 2022, 238, 2023, 239. That pretty much tells you that's it.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get from Willy Adames. You know, like you said, he'll be draftable next year, but not as a starting shortstop for me at this point.
Can I ask you before we go, can I ask you in the recent Fabapaloozas of the Jason Dominguez and Ronnie Mauricio's, and did you have a stock in any of that? Was there a direction that you went?
Shockingly, in my NL only labor, I got Harrison Bader and Ronnie Mauricio. I was one of the only people left with money to spend. And nice. I wasn't not a lot either. It was like $10, but it was enough to get both of them, which I'm very happy about. I had Ronnie Mauricio stashed in Tout Wars for like a month. So he had been sitting on my bench for a while. And actually Shelly, one of our other writers, Shelly Bearstraight, she said she was doing her research. We're in the same Tout Wars league on Sunday. And she was like, I couldn't find him in the free agents. And I was like, oh. Like, of course, DJ had stashed him already. So I had been, as a Mets fan, I'd been awaiting that call for quite a bit.
For sure. Yeah. And I think most people were. I think he'll produce for sure there. You know, I was in, I think, you know, other young rookies I've been in recently in a lot of leagues. I'm Parker Meadows for the Tigers, who I think is playing pretty well. And then Sedane Rafaela, the Red Sox call up. What's interesting is that he's recently only been playing shortstop as a backup to Trevor Story, but he can play the outfield, and Jaron Duran's now on the 60-day IL. So, like, I don't know if the playing time's going to be there, but I'm intrigued that they might be able to use him in a few places.
For sure. I mean, I would think he should get as much playing time as possible down the stretcher. Whether they agree, I don't know.
I think it's pretty clear. They might give it another week or so. But I think their recent play has taken them out of consideration, and you know, it might be time to see also, especially because like Masataka Yoshida has talked about how like it's tiring. The season is way longer than what he's used to.
Yeah. And so like I can see
in the final weeks of the year starting to get, you know, some of these younger guys in there a little more.
All right. Good stuff. So next week I think we're gonna do a recap of this draft. This 2024 Great. Mock. Shelly's actually in this mock as well. I'm going to see if maybe we can get her in here too and get some of her insight. You know, we'll show you the draft board. I think it'll be a really good exercise for us to start to take a look at as we start looking toward 2024, the regular season wrapping up. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. You can actually find all your favorite NBC Sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. Also, do yourself a favor and check out the RotoWorld Football Show with the season starting on Thursday. They'll have you covered all week long with excellent analysis. Follow us on Twitter or X if you don't already. Eric is at SamskyNYC. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, everyone. We will see you next time. Thank you.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.